Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, let's go ahead and do this. Podcast Tuesday. So I'm going to dispense with the pleasantries and get straight to it. Miami goes out, they punk the Patriots with Jay freaking Cutler outplaying Tom Brady. Josh Gordon is back. Back clowning DBs and then torching them on Twitter afterwards. And Golf Snitch finally got some stitches after mangling major championships for Lexi Thompson, Dustin Johnson, and the Cat. Plus, Texas A&M head basketball coach Billy Kennedy came in. Green Bay Packers linebacker Blake Martinez was a strong guest. And Lorenzo Alexander, after that epic snow game on Sunday, was excellent like he always is. Alvy, it's a busy Tuesday. Let's go ahead and get this thing right now. I'd like to start with a recap of Monday Night Football, especially when the Patriots get shocked the way they were. Miami 27, New England 20, the 11-point underdogs rising up and smashing New England. The Patriots get smacked by a team that they beat by 18 just 2 weeks earlier. Jay Cutler outplays Tom Brady. Miami's corners locked down New England's wideouts, and the Pats had a total of 2 yards of offense in the first quarter. Tom Brady's first regular season game with two picks since 2015. Kenyon Drake going for nearly 200 yards from scrimmage. I mean, crazy. Crazy stuff. Except it's the most predictable thing ever, because absolutely nothing in this league is guaranteed this year. It's a year where the Chargers can start 0-4 and still win their division, where the Rams can go from a laughingstock to the playoffs, and where Case Keenum and Super Bowl are being mentioned in the same sentence. That kind of year in the NFL. This year, the only thing that you can predict is that it's going to be unpredictable. Well, that... and also Bill Belichick's post-game reaction to being asked whether or not his team was caught looking past the Dolphins to the Steelers.
I think any of the guys might have been looking ahead to next week, looking past Miami.
No. Give me a break. Any questions about the game or not?
That noise, barely audible, above the clicking of cameras, was the sound of a guy shaking his head and muttering. There may have even been a JC blast in there, but I'm not even sure, but you knew that kind of reaction was coming. Alvin, run that back. This is when a reporter said to him, any chance you were looking past Miami and thinking about Pittsburgh?
I think any guys might have been looking at it next week, looking past Miami.
No. Give me a break. Any questions about the game or not?
Awkward. That was about as predictable as any clown rolling out this morning with a take about how Tom Brady is done. You know how that one goes. You point to the two picks, to the fact that he looked awkward in the pocket, and then craft some zany zinger about avocado ice cream, avoiding tomatoes, and drinking gallons of water to prevent sunburn, and then conclude that the guy's just too old and the game has passed him by. Sure he's not. Sure it hasn't. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say that Tom Brady looked great last night, because he didn't. In fact, the guy was weirdly off. Something about his movement. Something about the way the ball left his hand. But it doesn't mean this guy's done. In fact, far from it. He was under pressure last night. That'll happen. He never got comfortable. He threw a couple of picks. That also will happen. And it's not that surprising that all this happens on a night when he did not have Rob Gronkowski due to suspension. But if you're going to ignore the 3 months that came before last night and then somehow just use last night as proof that Brady has lost it, then you've lost it. He came into the game as one of the MVP favorites, and he's going to leave the game as one of the MVP favorites. Yes, he had a terrible game, but so did every other MVP candidate not named Antonio Brown. Carson Wentz had his season end, and while Brady threw a couple of picks, Russell Wilson had 3 interceptions. Yes, there's going to come a time when this guy's too old and he's too busted up to play like Tom Brady, but last night was not that game. As for Jay Cutler... Cutty was due, wasn't he? 25 of 38, 263 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks, and one laser after another. There was that 5-yard pass to Jarvis Landry.
First and goal, Miami at the 5 of New England. The running back in motion, the fake pitch. Here comes Cutler running out of the pocket, throws a pass, caught by Landry on the near side of the 5. He dives to the pylon near side. Touchdown, Miami!
Westwood won thanks to them. Plus, how about that 25-yarder to Jakeem Grant that was hauled in perfectly?
He gets the snap. He drops back 3. He cocks his right arm. There's a long line drive in the end zone. Leaping, falling down, corner catch, touchdown! Jakeem Grant heavily covered in the corner of the end zone. He beat Malcolm Butler.
And then finally, that 4-yard pass to Landry.
Cutler in the gun, gets the snap, drops back 2, sets, backpedals. There's a line drive, caught, touchdown, 1 yard deep. Down the middle, it's Landry with a chest-high 4-yard touchdown catch. With his hands in front of his chest, he grabs the ball a yard deep and uncovered, right down the middle, a yard deep in the end zone. A third touchdown pass by Cutler. And the lead of Miami over New England, 26-10.
3 for Cuddy, and there would have been a fourth if Grant had held onto a perfect bomb. Vintage Jay Cutler. That's the kind of game that Cutler turns in every now and then that keeps offensive coordinators drooling over him and ignoring all the other issues that come along with him. As for the Patriots, let's talk about very quickly where that leaves them. They've got Pittsburgh next. And if you're going to come in here and try to convince me that losing last night means they're going to lose to Pittsburgh, you're going to have a lot of work to do. If anything, seeing how badly they played last night makes me think that they're going to show up and ball up against Pittsburgh, because that's how the Patriots do it, and that's how this NFL season is going. There's no such thing as a good loss, especially one that could cost you the home field throughout. But that's exactly the type of wake-up call that they needed, and no one will get more out of the Pats getting embarrassed by the Dolphins than the Hood himself. We're joined by Billy Kennedy. Billy, it's great to have you on the show. How are you?
Good, Jim. Appreciate you having me.
It's good to have you there, Billy. Thanks so much. You're coming off a 20-point win over Prairie View A&M, where you pulled away from them in the second half. Let me start right there, Billy, because wins like that are not as easy as they look. In fact, there might be a tendency for players to relax and get a little bit too comfortable when they're playing at home against an overmatched opponent. So what do you make of the way that your team dealt with that challenge and the way they showed up?
Well, you're so right. We played Arizona just the game before, and you're playing in high-level games in all these preseason tournaments, and then all of a sudden you have to play somebody who's, it's a big game for them. It's their game of the year sometimes, and you got to get up to play, and good teams do it every night, and that's something we're trying to become. It took us to the second half really to play like we were capable of, and fortunately we were able to pull out a 20-point win.
You know, Robert Williams had himself a night. He had 8 points. He had 4 blocks. He had 16 rebounds. Afterwards, Prairie View A&M's coach, Byron Smith, was comparing him to Antonio McDice. Anytime your game is getting compared to his, it's pretty high praise. What's your reaction then when you hear that? And then how good can Williams be?
That's a good comparison. Antonio was a heck of a player. Antonio played with a great motor and did so many things athletically, and Robert's got some of the same talent, and so anytime you can get compared to somebody like Antonio McDice, it's something special. But he can be a special player. He's got so much more to give as he continues to develop, and I think you'll see it more at the next level than maybe even in college.
Billy Kennedy is my guest. Now, you went to the Sweet 16 in 2016, and then you lost 4 starters from that team. Things did not go quite as well last year, but then coming into this season, there was a feeling of optimism around the program. What did you see in the guys before the start of the year that made you think that this group might be something special?
Well, we had some older guys now coming back. We had some maturity. We had some development in the offseason, and then we had some new guards coming in. We recruited well on top of having some returners like Tyler Davis, DJ Hogan, Admont Gilder back, and Tony Trocia. So we had a blend of experience and good young guards that we didn't have the year before. We were shorthanded on the perimeter. And that was the biggest thing we saw, was that we had older guys coming back with some younger guards and some good talent.
You know, then you start off the season with a double-digit win over teams like West Virginia, Oklahoma State, USC. In particular, that win over West Virginia came after you fell behind that game 23-10, and then you come back to beat them 88-65. So what did wins like that do for the confidence of this group?
It was huge, because we played West Virginia last year at West Virginia, and were down big numbers and came back and cut it in to a close game. But we got a lot of respect for West Virginia. Anytime you beat a Bob Huggins team by double figures, you've done something, because they're so tough-minded and so good. And so that gave us a big boost of confidence, I thought. And we were able to do it without a couple of guys that didn't play that game. And so that helped some of the guys that weren't as talented or highly touted as the Robert Williams and the J.J. Caldwell, who didn't play in that game.
I need a second to talk to you about Stamps.com.
Listen, these days, you can get practically everything on demand, such as our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you.
So let me ask you, why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything that you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk. As an example, the holidays are coming up. My wife, Janet, is all about the Christmas card. We send out hundreds, literally hundreds of Christmas cards, and there's no way we could do it without Stamps.com. I'm going to print my own postage. I'm going to do it when I want and do it at home. Trust me, with the holidays coming up, you should do the exact same thing, and you'll thank me for it. Go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter jungle for a special, special offer. A four-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Do not wait. You want to go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter jungle. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office ever again. I know I won't. That's Stamps.com. And now it's back to our daily jungle. We're talking to Texas A&M head basketball coach Billy Kennedy. You know, Billy, I'm looking at the team right now, and it's curious to me to see what's going on in December when you consider what happened in November. The team traveled nearly 16,000 miles, which included a trip to Germany. All of that travel can take an enormous toll on a team, or maybe it can bring that team closer together. So what kind of an impact do you think it had on your guys?
Well, I think the experience with the military in Germany at Ramstein Base, Air Force Base, was huge for our team. You spend a lot of time together in the airport and on a long 11-hour flight, and, you know, you're able to do some things that aren't related to basketball. We were bowling in Germany and signing autographs and doing things with the military, visiting the hospital and doing some different things as a team that make you spend time together that you probably don't spend when you're at home. So I thought it brought us together closer as a team for sure.
Before I let you go, a couple of quick things. When you took over at A&M, you knew it was a program that needed rebuilding, and you set about doing it. You went from 14 wins in your first year to 28 wins in 2016. You're on pace for another big year this year. So what was that rebuilding process been like for you, and has it been pretty much what you expected?
Well, it's never what you expected. We were really blessed 2 years ago to have a special season, and it took a senior named Alex Caruso who led that group, and it took 4 years of building. Everybody wants it to happen in a hurry nowadays. Everything's got to be quick and fast, and I was blessed to have a staff and an administration that was patient enough to let some of those guys develop and mature and give us a chance to get some high-level recruiting classes. Because nowadays, when you take over a program, you're recruiting freshmen and sophomores, and it takes you 2 or 3 years to get those kids. And that's what happened with us. And it took us a little bit longer than we would like, but I was fortunate to be somewhere that was patient enough to wait and believe in what we were doing and to get it done.
Well, now you're at a point where you're being talked about as one of the favorites in a very tough SEC this year. It is early, but does it feel like this team has what it takes to compete for a conference title and even more?
We have what it takes, but we got a long ways to go. I think we're still growing up. We're still trying to figure out chemistry and roles, especially coming off the bench. But we're very talented and we're very deep. And with good players, you can win a lot of games, and that's what we've been able to do. But there's some things we can get better at. It's taking care of the ball and just developing our bench a little bit better and being more efficient on the offensive end is something I think we need to get better at to do what people say we can do.
You know, one last thing. I've got to ask you about Jason Kidd. I bring this up because you go back a little bit. When you were an assistant at Cal, You coach Jason Kidd, and time again, you always hear young point guards compared to Jason Kidd. I mean, I remember very clearly what he was like when he came up with you guys at Cal. What was he like when you first saw him, and what was his game and mentality like back then?
He was special from day one. I can remember never going recruiting because I didn't want to miss any games or any practices, or not wanting to go recruiting because he did something special every day. He could take the three walk-ons and one other scholarship player in practice and beat the rest of the team. And when people start comparing him, other players to him, I kind of laugh because he was one of a kind. And the things he did on both ends of the floor were special to make him the player he was. And that's a lot of pressure to put on a kid to compare him to Jason Kidd. So every day was a treat to be around him because how competitive he was and how talented he was.
Yeah, I mean, who's the closest thing you've ever seen to Jason Kidd, or really, has there never ever been another guy like him?
I haven't seen anybody else like him in the league. And last year they were comparing the ball kid to him, and we played them, and to me that was a stretch. And not nothing against it. He's a talented kid. Lonzo Ball's a very talented kid, but that Jason was special. He could take. You saw in his NBA career, people don't realize he took some mediocre teams very far with the New Jersey Nets, and then won a championship with Dallas on a really good team. I mean, he was the best player I've ever been around by far.
Let's talk Josh Gordon for a minute. Josh Gordon's back, and it was technically official last week when he had four receptions for 85 yards against the Chargers. But to me, it became even more official when he had three receptions for 69 yards and his first touchdown Sunday against the Packers. And then he went back to the sideline and he threw on sunglasses. Even better when he glossed the sunglasses as, quote, hater blockers. Hater blockers. Oh, that's awesome. But he wasn't officially back until after the game when he came across a quote from Packers DB Demaryius Randall on Twitter. At PG Packers News tweeted the following. How well did Packers CB Demaryius Randall cover Browns WR Josh Gordon? Quote, he had one catch, Randall said. Any more questions? Quote, end quote. So a pretty strong take from Randall. But it got an even stronger response from Gordon, who retweeted it with, quote, great win for them, but let's be serious. Considering several of our disadvantages as a team, this kid couldn't hold my jockstrap on my worst day. LOL. I mean, where do you even start? Where to begin? First off, I love the classic old school hold my jockstrap reset. I mean, that's a burn that goes back to, like, the invention of fire, and it still works. And in the right situation, can still be truly brutal. And how about Gordon going with a little subtle burn of his own teammates with, quote, considering several of our disadvantages as a team. You know, kind of like, we're garbage. You should have beaten us by more. And the fact that you didn't says more about you than it does about us. Now, of course, there was no way Randall was going to see that and not respond. He did see it. He did respond. He dropped a pair of crying, laughing emojis with, you must be on that bleep again. You must be on that bleep again. And there you have it. It took a grand total of less than 2 weeks before somebody went there, before somebody dropped Gordon's history with drugs into a trash-talking tweet. So now he's officially back. Josh Gordon is officially back. I'm talking about back in the league and back in DB's heads. Because if he's getting into Twitter feuds, that means something's working. And personally, normally when I'm saying to a player, check yourself, that if you can't handle that phone, put it away, put it down. I'm not saying it here. In fact, I've got no problem with this. But Browns head coach Hugh Jackson does. He's not a fan. Hugh said, quote, I would hope that we wouldn't do that. I want us to do our talking on the field with our play. That's where the focus needs to be because that's what it's going to take to get us to winning. Talking isn't going to do anything. I'm sure the emotions are high. We were close to having an opportunity. We didn't finish. He didn't really make a huge catch in the second half, so I think all that stuff fuels into it. But I would advise our players, let's not get caught up in social media and going bantering back and forth. Let's just continue to play and become as good as we can over the next 3 weeks. End of quote. I guess I see Hugh working, sort of. I mean, that ship and his career are taking on crazy water. He's doing his best to keep them both afloat. But when things are not going so well, maybe you shake it up, coach. Hell, Hugh, everything you've done and told them has led you to this point. In short, nothing you've said or done has worked. So maybe what they should do is the opposite of whatever you tell them to do. You say, just let your play do the talking for you. I say, buy every one of these guys a brand new iPhone 10 and let them thumb out whatever the hell they want. Listen, the last thing that I want to do is help the Cleveland Browns right now. Because if they don't finish this perfect season, I'm going to be pissed. But clearly, focusing on what's happening on the field is the reason they're one of the worst teams ever. Better to let them try and kill fools on social media. They have to be better at that than they are at football. They can't be any worse. And clearly, Gordon is one of the league's best at both, and he proved it again only 2 games in after missing multiple years because of a drug suspension. Keep it up. You can't beat anybody on the field. Maybe you can beat them down on social. Maybe it's time to pick a fight with the Ravens' official Twitter account ahead of Sunday's game. And since Gordon set the bar at hold my jockstrap, maybe you start hitting at Ravens with a few of your mom jokes.
Your mom.
Or, hey, yo, I'm rubber, you're glue. Smack. Hell, Hugh. You're not going to out-coach John Harbaugh, so you may as well take a run at him on Twitter. Because I'm willing to bet that Gordon, after that Twitter feud with Randall, is going to come out on fire on Sunday. And if DeShone Kizer can get this guy the rock, he'll be letting the entire world know who he is and who isn't fit to carry his jock. Man, again, I don't even know why I'm helping these guys. I have no idea why I'm helping these guys, but telling your best player to put his phone away when he's single-handedly trying to spare the franchise and every player and every coach at that facility the biggest embarrassment ever is not the way to go. Hugh, if you're smart, you'll make sure that Gordon's blower is juiced up fully and ready to use at all times. This guy's running on some high premium fuel right now. Stay out of his way. Get him the rock. Stay out of the way. And again, I have no idea why I'm helping these guys. Get him the rock. Stay out of the way. Packers linebacker Blake Martinez is my guest. Blake, good morning. Great to have you on. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great, Blake. Thanks for the visit. You were on the road in Cleveland against a team that had not won a game this season. They get up on you 21-7. I know you'll tell me that nobody was panicking on the sideline, but what's going through your head when it's all unfolding? You're down by 2 touchdowns. Were you ever nervous at any point during that game?
I think at certain moments, definitely when it was 21-7, we kind of were looking at each other on the sideline wondering what was going on. What were we missing? And I think once we got down to kind of the nuts and bolts of it, it was just guys kind of trying to overstep their boundaries, and we weren't doing what we would normally do, and we were just trying to make plays on our own. And at that point, we kind of sat everyone down and said, hey, just do your job, and we'll get this thing done, because we're a winning team. We know how to get it done, and like we did, obviously, with Devontae's walk-off touchdown, we did it in an awesome fashion.
Blake Martinez, my guest. I mean, that's as good as it gets, right? A walk-off touchdown. We're talking about Devontae Adams with that 25-yard TD pass and ran right down the tunnel. As you see him heading down the tunnel and you find a way to win that game, what's going through your mind? Emotionally, what were you feeling like then?
Oh, it was unbelievable. I think it was just kind of a big statement to our season, just guys fighting through. No matter who we put on the fields, what situation we're in, we're never going to stop fighting. And I think that walk-off, him walking in the locker room, you always talk about it. Hey, if I get a touchdown to finish the game, I'm just going straight to the locker room. And
right.
And to see that done and to be a part of it and to be a part of that comeback was just incredible.
We're talking to Blake Martinez. Now, the win keeps your playoff hopes alive, and there's that possibility that you might get Aaron Rodgers back this week. So what's the vibe like around the facility right now, and do you expect to see him playing on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of have the same mindset going into this week as any other week. Recently, it's just, hey, if we get him back, we're gonna welcome him with open arms. He's obviously one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and to be able to have him back in the lineup or whatever happens is just going to obviously make us a better football team. But overall, I think going into this week, we're just preparing kind of for both standpoints, and we're going to go about it the same way. We're going to be professionals and know, hey, we got to show up on Sunday and do whatever it takes, no matter who's starting for us at quarterback.
Packers linebacker Blake Martinez joins us on the program. You know, I had Atlanta Falcons linebacker Deion Jones on yesterday, and we were talking about the difference between being a rookie and a second-year player. He said one of the keys was he just felt a lot more comfortable doing everything. So for you, what's been the biggest difference from your rookie year to right now?
Yeah, I think that kind of is a part of it for me, is just knowing what to expect from kind of fall camp all the way throughout the season. I think the biggest thing for me was kind of going through my first year, I think I was trying to overdo things. I wanted to be the next Luke Kuechly. I wanted to be the next Ray Lewis, the next Brian Urlacher, just the next great, great linebacker. And I was trying to force myself to be like them, where this offseason I kind of reflected on things and just looked at my play and was asking myself, what was I missing? Why wasn't I making the plays I know I should have made? And it was that standpoint of, hey, I need to just be Blake Martinez. I need to go out there and allow my instincts and play style to kind of show. And at that point, I started making the plays that I knew I could make and just trying to keep getting better and better as the season goes on.
Yeah, Blake, when you mention those guys and say, I want to be the next great one, I want to be a guy like Luke Kuechly or some of the other guys you mentioned, in your mind, what sets them apart? What makes them great? Is it their playmaking ability or is it something else?
I think it's just the attention to detail. I think I learned that extremely at Stanford, and kind of moving throughout the league, you just watch them on tape. That's my big thing that I do, is kind of watch guys, whether it's Sean Lee, Luke Kuechly, Bobby Wagner, any of those high-name guys, and you just see them each and every play. It's just the attention to detail, whether it's reading the pulling guard, whether it's reading run pass, whether it's knowing what the formation is kind of going to attack you and how it's going to go, and then going down the fundamentals. They're never false-stepping. They're never making the wrong read, and it's incredible to watch, and if you're able to do that every single play, it's just going to obviously make you that much better, and you're going to stand out that much more.
Green Bay Packers linebacker Blake Martinez joining us. You know, your teammate Mike Daniels picked up on that, like, literally from the jump. He said from the moment that you arrived, he liked you because he liked your attitude, and the fact that you were saying to him, well, things like you just said to us, you want to go watch film. And I think you touched on this when you said that you learned that at Stanford. I mean, did you get that from Stanford, or is this the way you have always been in terms of attention to detail and preparation?
No, yeah, it's definitely the way I was kind of raised, just from the standpoint, my dad was a guy that didn't go to college, but he worked his butt off every single day, got his business degree, and kind of started from scratch, and now is an extremely successful company. And I think from his standpoint, I went and worked with him multiple times, and I could just go back to one story where every single time I worked with him, he owns a construction business. So I'd go to one of his pads, and his job for me each and every time was, all right, take this small little magnet, and every nail that you pick up, you get a penny. And I would go around each and every house, and if I came back and showed him all the nails, I'd get one penny for each, but if I ever missed one, I'd get no money at all for the day.
Whoa.
And so kind of going through that, I learned, hey, it's attention to detail, and it's kind of making sure that you finish the job every single time you've been told to do something.
I mean, so were you doing it for the money, or were you doing it for his approval?
I think it's a combination. I mean, I'd end up with like $10, and back then it was, to me, $10 was like $1 million. So I was pretty stoked because I was able to either buy, I don't know, Yu-Gi-Oh cards, Pokemon cards, whatever it was at the time.
Oh, for sure. You're walking around with some serious dough if that's the case. Blake Martinez joining us. You know, it goes even further. Your commitment to preparation goes way back, but especially when it comes to your diet. I'm always fascinated by what guys eat. I mean, you are what you eat. Teammates talk about the fact that they have never, ever seen you eat or drink anything that's bad for you, that you've always been super clean. As an example, you don't drink soda. When was the last time you had a soda, and what made you stop?
Last time was probably 8 or 9 years ago.
Wow.
And I can remember the reason why easily. It was one of the days I was kind of hanging out with my dad during the day, and he'd always go to this given kind of car wash area. And we stopped at the car wash, and one of his really good friends worked there, and he was just this, like, swole dude, like, yoked out of his mind.
Right.
And I'd ask him, I remember the day, I asked him, like, how did you get like that? And he told me, I don't drink soda. And so from that day on, I stopped drinking soda from then on, and it's working out for me. I'm trying to get more swole, but I think
so
it's working
good.
Out for me.
That is such a great story. Blake Martinez joining us. I'm going to stop drinking soda right now because I want to be swole. As a 50-something-year-old dude, I want to be swole too. All right, so do you have any cheat meals or cheat days when it comes to food? I mean, is there anything, like maybe a little bit of candy, something that you might allow yourself as a reward, or is that just not the way you're built?
No, so I always have the kind of, it's all about proportions. And for me, I have a kind of strategy and kind of detailed plan, just like anything else. So if I set my cheat meals up kind of strategically from the standpoint of either, it wouldn't be a cheat meal, it's a cheat day, actually, I want to correct that. It's basically after the season, after OTAs end, after off season ends, after training camp. So I'd probably say 4 times out of the year, where I basically give myself a 24-hour period to eat whatever I want. And those days get pretty gruesome, but it's always good to kind of have that portion and understand once that day ends why I don't eat that stuff.
I mean, Blake, so you got to give me an idea. So, like, what's a day like that like? I mean, is it a cheeseburger on a Sunday? Or, I mean, are you rolling out of the rack all morning?
My favorite meal is breakfast. So the last time I had it, we went to a place out here, I think it's called Pancake Place, and I had 3 ginormous pancakes, fried French toast, like a ham, and like green onion omelet. So that was just breakfast. And then for lunch, we went to some like sub place where we got like, I don't know, a foot-long sub. And then we went to Chili's, got like molten lava cake, got boneless buffalo wings, a burger, and then end of the night with donuts. So it was a long day for me. I took about like a 20-hour nap after that was done.
It's incredible. So any booze in the middle or around any of that? A beer, a cocktail, anything like that?
Nah. So I'm staying away from the alcohol portion. That's kind of the one thing I'll hold strict to myself, just to make sure I kind of don't. I don't know, get too tempted and get too used to that.
Blake Martinez, my guest. Good thinking. So playing linebacker for the Packers is obviously one of the most iconic positions in football. What's it mean to you to be a Green Bay Packer?
Oh, it means so much to me. Just from the standpoint, once I got here, it was crazy just to see the fan base and see how amazing they are. I think the first day I walked into the locker room, they had us get here, I don't know, 5:30 in the morning to kind of go through physicals and those types of things. And there's people, I think there's like 20 people out front, already knew who I was, asking for autographs and those types of things. And it was just unbelievable to see, because I kind of go back to the Stanford days. I maybe had 2 people at my practice and at one time. This is just me showing up to the facilities and there's people waiting out front.
Blake Martinez, my guest for another moment or so. Blake, your name's getting a lot of run as a possible Pro Bowl selection. I know you're going to tell me you're focused on the next game and on team goals, and I believe you when you say it, but what would it mean to you to be named to a Pro Bowl, especially this soon in your career?
Oh, it'd be unbelievable. It's just one of those things, like you said, that as long as I'm making my team better, that's what I'm going to be happy with. But everyone has those individual goals and wants to kind of achieve those things, and being selected as a Pro Bowl participant would just be incredible, and it just kind of attests to all the hard work that I put in this offseason and in my career for football.
Last thought. I mean, you're living the dream. You're playing for the Green Bay Packers. The team is competitive. I mean, this is what you set it up for. This is what you've worked your whole life for. But I don't want to undersell or underrate the college experience. What was it like for you to go to Stanford, be in that academic environment, and play football at a school like that?
Oh, it was unbelievable. I think Stanford's just the number one institute for football and school, and I just think number one institute overall in the world, just from the standpoint that I think every single day, no matter what I was doing, I was challenged at every aspect, whether I was on the football field or in the classroom. There's people, I think someone in my classroom sent like a spider monkey to space because it could, like, counteract gravity. And I'm just like, oh, gosh, like, there's no way I'm beating this guy on a test. And so it's just those aspects where you're like, hey, I got to grind every day, like, from when I wake up and when I go to sleep, just to be able to compete with these people in an everyday basis.
God, I wonder, what's more intense, being around the best and most gifted athletes in the world or being around the best and brightest people in the world? Because you got the best of both worlds.
Oh, yeah, and I think going to Stanford allowed me to kind of step into this realm with the best athletes in the world and best people in their profession that much easier, because I was able to walk in and understand their mindset and what they're trying to achieve every single day. And I knew how much pressure and how much I have to put into this just to be able to stay at that level for a long time.
You know, how about a very quiet, very dignified, very polite golf clap for the sport itself? Yesterday, the almighty powers at the USGA and RNA ripped the dumbest page from that novel of a rule book, and they fed it to the shredder. Listen up, narcs. This is for you. A shot between the eyes. No longer can losers on their couch phone or on their couch phone into golf tournaments and dime on some player who mismarked their ball or dropped in the wrong area or grounded their club in some debris. It's over. The biggest bags in the history of the universe have been disarmed. So call your cable company and cancel your DVR, you deadbeats. There is no longer any reason to pause and rewind live TV, because nobody wants to hear from your tattletale asses anymore. You know, honestly, I could care less that it's ultimately better for the players. I'm just happy that these losers who have nothing better to do than catch pro golfers accidentally screwing up have nothing to do anymore. Because they really don't have anything to do anymore. If you're a person with enough time to be a volunteer D-bag from your couch, then you weren't doing anything else to begin with. And I would tell you to find another sport to play watchdog for, but no other sport is ridiculous enough to let TV viewers call in and take over their replay center. You see, the real winner here is not golf. Because that rule change is just a reminder of how dumb they were to even allow it in the first place. The real winner is not Lexi Thompson, because she already had her major ripped earlier this year from some toolbox loser on his recliner. The real winner here is whoever had to work the phones during these tournaments, because that person never has to pick up a lit line and hear from some mouth-breathing failure wanting them to go on a narking goose chase ever again. That call center employee is the real winner by far. You know how happy I'd be if CBS were to get me on the phone and say, hey, Van Smack, Josh in Detroit and Parody Larry are never allowed to call in ever again.
Give me back my son.
Wouldn't I be the biggest winner? So how about a golf clap for the sport of golf, which finally pulled its head out of its own backside and curbed those loser couch cops narcs once and for all? I can truly say, without any reservation whatsoever, that the world is a much better place today. You narcs can run along now and find somebody else to mess with. And remember, snitches get stitches, bags. Find something else to do, losers. I never understood that. Never understood that. Never understood why it was in place. Never understood why it took so long to get rid of it. At least now, finally, they did the right thing. Good. It's gone. Nobody likes a snitch. Nobody likes a narc. Nobody likes anybody who tattles on somebody else. How did you have that much time in the first place to commit to that? Never made any sense to me. Lorenzo Alexander is my guest. Lorenzo, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Lorenzo, great to hear your voice. Now, you're battling for a playoff spot. You're playing in the snow. Indy ties the game late. They forced a turnover. Had a chance to win it with a last-second field goal in regulation. I've got to start right there. What was going through your mind when they lined up for that kick?
I mean, it was crazy. You know, obviously they called their timeout and brought off, you know, half their training staff to kind of clear a spot so Vinatieri can try to make a kick. But, you know, we were just hoping and praying that because of the conditions, he was going to have a similar mishap that he had earlier in the game as far as missing two other field goals. So it definitely turned out good for us.
Hey, Lorenzo, crazy is right. I mean, that was a wild, wild day. The game goes into overtime. You guys keep fighting, and then LeSean McCoy breaks off that TD run to win it with less than 2 minutes to go. So what was that game like for you from an emotional standpoint in terms of the highs and lows?
I mean, it was all over the place. You know, we did enough to, you know, keep him out of the end zone for, you know, until the last, 2 minutes of the game, and then they find a way to score, and it kind of goes down. They tie it, and you think they win because of, you know, the two-point conversion. They throw the penalties, and they kick the extra point. So it was kind of all over the place. But to be able to finish out the game, you know, getting the ball back for our offense and to be able to finish out the way it did, it was awesome. And then obviously you saw the mayhem after the game, all the snow angels, snowballs being tossed all over the place. So it was great.
Lorenzo Alexander, my guest. I mean, it seemed like it was a near whiteout at points during the game, and there's even some thunderous snow in the second half. So what's it like to be a player when you're out there balling in the snow? I mean, on some level, is that fun, or really is it just a big pain in the ass?
It's more of a pain than anything, especially going in a certain direction in our stadium. The wind is blowing in your face. So you're getting snow, you know, ice. You can't really see anything, and you're just out there kind of high-kneeing, you know, trying to get to the ball carrier. It was just crazy, you know, looking up on the scoreboards, you know, how they show, like, everybody's speed. Normally the top speed is, like, around 22 miles per hour, and for that game was, like, 14. So it was just crazy. It almost turned into, like, a glorified walkthrough as far as the speed of the game, just because with that, you know, felt like a foot of snow on the ground.
Oh, so how'd you deal with that? For instance, how do you go about managing your footing and your cutting when you're playing in conditions like that?
You know, the cutting and footing wasn't as bad as you think it would be just because you were moving at a much slower rate because you couldn't run, you know, top end. Top end, it probably would have been an issue. But, you know, guys maybe slipped and failed a little bit here and there, but it wasn't as bad as you think that you couldn't get out. I mean, you saw Shady the way he was cutting and making guys miss and turn, so it really didn't affect him at all. But it wasn't that big of an issue. Just more just having to pick your feet up and guys falling, tripping over them than anything else.
Lorenzo Alexander joining us. You look at Shady in his career. It looks like he loves the snow. Now, Kyle Williams said after the game that he gets an extra boost of motivation and emotion when he looks into the stands and he sees the fans out there on a day like that when the snow is coming down. Is that the way you see it too?
Yeah, man. It's not like Buffalo Bills fans, they crazy up here. Rabbit fans, I mean, you should see the tailgating. So it doesn't surprise me that they relish in these type of conditions out there. You see guys with shirts off and, you know, just having a great time enjoying it. You know, whether they was up in the nosebleeds and can barely see the game or down there right with us, they really enjoy it, especially when we're able to win a game. And, you know, just want to continue to try doing it and try to make a playoff run here.
You know, not only dealing with the conditions, but you lose your starting quarterback, so Joe Webb comes in. How proud are you then of the fact that that team, your team, found a way to win a critical game despite the weather and the injuries?
I mean, it's huge. You know, it's next man up. You know, obviously Joe Webb has been more of an athlete for us, being a receiver, playing a lot of special teams. For him to come into the game, make some big runs, some big throws that won a DT on the sideline, well, obviously was huge for us. It was just a great testament to just the type of player he is and the guys that we've brought into this team, because you never know when your opportunity is. But everybody who's had a chance that we've brought in has stepped up in the times that we needed them. So it was huge and big time for us as far as getting that dub.
Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander, my guest. Now, when you and I spoke near the beginning of the season, we talked about the perception outside the locker room that maybe the team was tanking and looking to rebuild. You made it very clear that a lot of guys in that locker room had never won anything and you were not going to be losing or trying to lose on purpose for any reason at all. Now that you're right in the middle of a playoff hunt, you've got a winning record, is there any part of you that wants to say to everybody, now what do you have to say, and how do you like us now?
No, not at all. We still got to grind these things out here. You know, it's too early to be starting beating on our chest and showing how great we've been or, you know, how consistent we've been being in the playoff hunt here of late. So we just got to stay focused because, obviously, early in the we lost a little bit of focus and dropped three games. So we can't turn our attention to all the naysayers and the outside. We got to keep this thing internal and keep focused so we can get ready for these Miami Dolphins coming in town this weekend.
All right, so I get that. Not expecting to say as much, but last year was your first season in Buffalo. Things didn't really go the way you would liked in the last five games of the year, but even though there's work still to be done, how special is it to be in this position where you're playing important games in mid-December?
I mean, it's huge because there's a lot of teams that aren't. And, you know, for us, you know, definitely starting off the season, as you alluded to earlier, to be able to be in this position now is huge for us. We want to continue it. You know, we want to be able to break that playoff drought and really start some real change around here culturally as far as winning games and being a perennial playoff team, and it all starts with this season.
Do you guys talk about the playoff drought, or does nothing need to be said about that, and does it not come up?
I mean, you can't but talk about it. I mean, it's always the elephant in the room. So, you know, people have mentioned to you out internally. We'll bring it up from time to time, but it's not like a focal point of what we talk about each and every week. We know it's there, so it has to be addressed, and then we kind of moved on from it.
You mentioned Miami. Jay Cutler and the Dolphins had a big game last night, a strong game. As you start to break down film on them, what is your biggest concern?
I mean, they're a solid, well-balanced team. Obviously, they have two great running backs that have been able to move the ball for them, and then you throw Landry in the mix. It's hard to defend, and Cutler looks like he's getting some rhythm with them, and then you throw in that defense that has some great pass rushers. You got, you know, Sue in the middle, Cam on the outside, and then you're throwing in that special teams unit led by Michael T, who's probably going to end up making a Pro Bowl on special teams. They're a well-balanced team, and they're hitting on high cylinders. Obviously, anytime you beat the Patriots, you have a lot of confidence, a lot of swag you're going to bring in with you to that next game. So we're going to have our hands filled. So we just got to make sure defensively we shut down that run game and put it all on Cutler's hands and allow guys like Jerry Hughes and Kyle Williams and Ryan Davis to get after him.
Lorenzo Alexander, my guest. I mentioned, before I let you go, I mentioned at the very top that you are the Buffalo Bills' Walter Payton Man of the Year and a nominee for the league-wide award for your work with the Aces Foundation, which you started nearly a decade ago. What does it mean to you to receive that award and that nomination?
You know, it's a huge honor, you know, because your teammates vote on this award for your team, and to have the respect of them, to see that what I'm doing on and off the field on a day-to-day basis is genuine in who I am. And, you know, just all the guys around the league that you kind of get start rubbing shoulders with in the same belt, you know, a guy like Benjamin Watson or Thomas Davis or Larry Fitzgerald, men like that that I've played with, I've known for a long time and have inspired me to do great things, just trying to pass that along. And so I'm just so happy and ecstatic that the foundation is getting a lot of notoriety because of it, and then the work that we're doing and trying to impact young people's lives in inner city. So it's a huge privilege and just want to keep doing the great work.
Dan in Denver. Dan, good morning. What's going on?
Rome, I wanted to talk about this Marlins trade real quick. The taxpayers of Miami paid for that stadium so the ownership group could afford players so they wouldn't have to trade away a player like Cabrera again. Then this bum Jeter comes in with no money and he sells Stanton for pennies. Forget being able to afford Stanton. Jeter can't even afford to own a team. Jeter being in baseball is good for baseball. Jeter ruining baseball for a city is bad for baseball. And I'm not saying they had to keep Stanton. I'm just saying you have to get more in return than some second baseman and a pack of gum. But hey, I'm sure a player with the last name Castro will be a huge hit in Miami. And Rome, huge congratulations to you and the XR4TI for the simulcast. I'm sure you guys are going to kill it. But quick question, is it going to be in color or black and white? Asking for Adam Hawk. Seriously, we need to talk about your EP's hair. You run a 9-segment show. Hawk has a 9-pigment fro. I honestly can't tell if he's the youngest-looking old guy or the oldest-looking young guy I've ever seen. But hey, that rec streak you guys had on the show was pretty cool. Maybe we can start a white streak. Hawk can be the first guest. This dude has a bigger white streak in his hair than Cam Diaz and Something About Mary.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Hey, Dan, I don't like that call. I don't like that call for a number of reasons. But the biggest reason I don't like that call is because personal appearance is not show fodder. Liz in Fall City. Hi, Liz. How are you?
I'm great. Hey, Jim, I don't know what kind of freak show you got going on today. You got one guy calling about his nipples, then this other guy wanting to, quote, slide into the lady clone's DMs. Hey, dude, only 14-year-olds use that kind of terminology. In other words, the answer is no. Now I digress to Dan in Denver, who I had to crack a while back about him insulting Manu Ginobili's hair a few months ago, and now he's cracking on Hawk. Are you obsessed with hair, Dan? Maybe you should change your handle to Dan in Denver, remember the Maine. I don't know, Dan, not to mimic you, but are you just an old guy with boring takes or a boring guy with old takes? Anyway, Jim, to all these guys, I just want to say, grow up and step your game up. I'm out.
Rocker. Nice job, Liz. Way to go. We go to Orange County. Larry, here in SoCal. Larry, good morning. How are you?
Rome, what's up?
What's up?
First off, just want to call to say, hey, love your podcast. Love the out-of-the-box stuff, the non-sports stuff. It's wild. I'm in OC, like you said. I just got a nice workout at the JCC, pulling out of the parking lot. I'm literally staring at Mariner's Church, for anyone who's not familiar with Dirty John podcast, which is great. I'm staring at Mariner's Church when I hear you announce the Dirty John podcast, and my freaking head just explodes. I'm so stoked to hear your take on this story. For anyone who's not familiar with it, it's a wild story. Without giving anything away, it's rocked Orange County, and cannot wait to hear your take on it. I am stoked out of my mind to hear it. And that's it, 2015. O'Reilly Auto Parts, Tweet of the Week winner, out.
All right, Larry, nice job. Look at that, man. He took care of his business. Unlike you, Dan, in Denver, that guy handled his business, and he was handling something much more difficult. Rex in the ABQ. Hey, Rex, how are you?
Rome, I am great. And this Josh Gordon news is so great for football. The NFL is better when Josh Gordon is mouthing off on Twitter. I love the feuds. It's got me so excited, my nipples are pointing north.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
That's great, Rex. Thanks a lot. Hey, Rex, that would have been crap on my voicemail box. Were the worst calls ever come through. You think something like that's going to work here? Nobody wants to hear about your nipples, Rex. Nobody wants to hear about any part of your anatomy, Rex. Nobody wants to hear from you at all, Rex. That never happened. Scott in New York City. Scott, what's up? How are you?
Rome, it's your boy, Scotty Farrell.
Oh,
I want to
no
crack on that fat-ass Jay Gruden. Against the Chargers on Sunday, the Redskins' D gets a pick six to pull within 18 with about 3 minutes left and all three other timeouts. Does Gruden go for two to make it a 16-point game, two-possession game? No, he kicks the extra point to go down by 17. What the hell was the point of that, Gruden? Next time, feel free to mix in some basic mathematics, fat ass.
All right, first, Scotty.
Fat ass.
Fake Scotty.
Fat ass.
Scotty.
Fat ass.
Fake Scotty.
Fat ass.
Now faster. Scotty.
Fat ass.
Fake Scotty.
Fat
Scotty.
Ass.
Fake Scotty.
Fat
Scotty.
Ass.
Fake Scotty.
Fat
Scotty.
Ass.
Fake Scotty.
Fat ass. Fat ass.
Fat ass.
It's
fat
fake and no-cal. That's what it is.
Fat
it's
fat
fake and no-cal.
Fat ass.
Fat ass.
Fat ass.
Yeah,
fat
we
ass.
Got I get it. You're on TV. You're a little hyped up. I got it. Clones, that's it for now. Thanks for checking it out. The tape starts rolling on the Jim Rome podcast momentarily. The LA Times is. Christopher Gofford is my guest, the man behind the Dirty John series, which is tremendous. He's my guest. Trust the podcast, hit download, and check back here tomorrow. See you then. I'm out.